would not turn off.
Let's. I'm the one who's late, so let's move on. So, what you want to know about is this? We're going to just start by catching up on some oven stuff. So you want to know about leaving food in a hot oven on Shabbos?
Leaving, not necessarily leaving it in there, putting it in the morning to bring it back up to edible temperature.
So
without
there's no way to do that. The only way to do that is if you had. I should say there's no way to do it. The only way to do it is if you have there's no way to do that. Cold food cannot be put in an oven that's on Shabbos.
Even if the oven has a...
Yeah, because the blech... See, a blech only allows for you to take food out of the oven and put it back. But you cannot introduce cold food to a cooking surface or utensil unless you have done something to it, like a hefsek kedera. And the hefsek kedera can't be done in an oven. There's no way you can put a pot on top of an oven. If you could, fine.
You can move the racks.
Well, that doesn't do any good. It's still in the oven. The point is the sages were concerned that any act of placing food for the first time that Shabbos on a cooking surface or in a cooking utensil, on a stove or in an oven, will appear like cooking. And then we will come to cook other foods. Therefore, anything that looks like an act of cooking, exposing something to a heat source for the first time, that Shabbos is prohibited. That's called chazara.
It's already been cooked.
Right, it doesn't matter, but it looks, all I see is I'm taking food and putting it in the oven. That means I'm cooking, it looks like I'm cooking on Shabbos. It's not cooking, because it's already been cooked, but because it looks like cooking, the sages prohibited anything that wasn't on the fire already on Shabbos. Unless there is this unusual thing called hefsek kedera, because that is so bizarre, because nobody cooks that way. Nobody takes food and cooks it on top of a chalon pot, for example. Therefore, that's okay. But anything which is a normal, typical movement of cooking, like taking something and putting it in an oven, that's prohibited unless it was in the oven and the oven had a blech. Then you can take it out and put it back in the oven. How do you have a blech in an oven? You have an insert. Right. That's what we're talking about. Right. Okay. So.
Well, with the gas oven, if it's not exposed.
Well, yes. Let's address that. I was going to address that too. Yes. But let me finish.
I also have a warming oven.
Yes. A warming oven, which is a drawer.
Yeah.
It's a warming drawer underneath, right?
Yeah.
And the way I understand it, it has the capacity to make something very hot.
No, it only keeps it warm.
It only keeps it warm. It does not allow for the thing to get up to. Could it ever cook anything if you kept it in all night?
You could not cook from raw.
Okay, so a warming oven.
Does it have an element in it?
The element is underneath the surface. The element is underneath a flat surface.
Is it a separate element than the normal oven? In other words, you have an oven with
this
a drawer underneath.
This is a completely separate thing. It happens to be in a cavity that it was designed to hold it.
Got it. Does it have controls?
It has a control
which
you
don't
want to leave.
That's it.
Yeah.
So leaving something in there for sure, if it does not have enough heat to ever cause cooking, right?
Yeah.
No matter how long you left it in there, then there's no problem introducing something to it. But it's not a cooking device, so it should be no problem. In other words, if the device that you're putting something on Shabbos, doesn't have enough heat, kedei levasho, enough to cook, then you can take it from the fridge and put it on there because you're not doing something that looks like cooking.
Now, we also have a feature on our oven that's a low temperature that's designed to raise dough. You know, put dough in there to
warm it. Yeah. That's a problem. That is a problem. Even though it's a low temperature, that's still a problem because that's a cooking utensil that has. That's being used as a normal thing.
In other words, it wouldn't look good if you close your eyes to do it, so no people wouldn't see what you do.
Whenever the sages prohibited something, they don't care if your circumstance doesn't fit what they're worried about. because that's okay. Yeah.
You can start.
It's prohibited. No, we did start. That was it. Now, Diane, last week I made a distinction between ovens that where the element is inside, and ovens where the element is underneath, where the heat source, the gas oven where the heat source is not exposed. Now, why was that useful? So the thing is this: an oven with the gas source underneath is still a cooking device. Right. So therefore, regarding shahia, regarding leaving things in the oven on Shabbos that would need a blech, so this would not need a blech. But regarding chazara, it doesn't help. It will not help regarding putting something back. So
there was one other thing also that I wanted to follow up on. And that was, you said, like, you can heat milk on Shabbat. So how do you do that?
Yes, by immersing the milk container, like a cup or a glass or a bottle, a baby bottle, for example, in a kli sheni. So you take hot water. Right. So it could be very hot water, but it's in a kli sheni, and you simply immerse the container of milk in the hot water.
And then the last thing.
Yes.
If you had something like a hot plate.
Yes.
That had a warm setting, so it was just a very low setting. It never got, like, even up to 110, which was the minimum that you set.
Right.
And you had it on a timer. Could you put stuff on that or not? We never spoke about timers.
Well, I guess so funny. So I think we did, because I'm doing this class twice and I forget what we did.
No, but I've been waiting for that.
Yeah, okay. No, you're right. It was on the notes from the class that we did in the day, and then we never got to it that night, and we never talked to it here at night. So, first of all, let's do timers with normal hot surfaces that are cooking surfaces. So, the Chazon Ish and others clearly rule that forgetting about the issue of using timers on Shabbos, but in terms of the issue of the cooking and Shehiyah and Chazara, they clearly rule that there's no difference between food being placed on a cooking surface for the first time on Shabbos without a timer, and having it be placed on a cold surface, which becomes a hot surface on itself with a timer. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to put food that has not been heated that Shabbos already and is not still warm. You can't put it on something which is going to get hot. That's also mixed to kibbavasha, because it's the same thing. You're introducing a food to a source of heat, which will be a source of heat soon. So the fact that it happens to be going on later doesn't matter. It's still going to be it's still considered to be the normal way of cooking, and that would be included in the ban that the sages said, that unless the food has been on it and you took it off with the intention of returning it and it's still warm and you didn't let go of it, you cannot put it on a cooking thing which will go on. Now, that's a regular thing. Now, we're talking about something which is not a cooking device because it does not have the capacity to heat up to that level, like the warmer. I don't see any reason why it can't be on the timer. In terms of chazara.
Even if it wasn't on a timer.
Because you can put it on. Yes. That thing is not a cooking device. Right. You can do that. Anything that cannot get that hot is not governed by the problem of putting something on it for the first time on Shabbos, as long as that thing, well, of course the thing's going to be cooked. So that should not be a problem at all.
And if it was a thing that had the capacity with the controls to get hotter, then if you cover the controls, is that all you need to do?
And if you have a blech, well, you would have to have a blech on both things. Covering the controls will only be one. You'd have to have a blech on the surface of the thing as well, because the covering the controls is actually the piece of news. The gzera of blech is to put it under the food, between the food and the thing. Other achronim come along and say, but nowadays the main issue is the controls, not because that's where you are manipulate the fire. Therefore, they add that you should do the controls as well.
Okay.
So you should do both. Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Now, there was something. Oh, yeah. Now, I just want to be thorough that Rav Moshe Feinstein says very clearly in Igros Moshe that timers have been accepted to be used for lights, but he does not agree with the idea of using timers for other things. He even doesn't agree to use timers for air conditioners or anything like that. He holds it in general. He does not permit the use of timers to turn on and off other things. like TVs, videos.
I was thinking more like, you know, the crock pot that I make my chillin's in. I would like to be able to have it turn itself off when I'm finished.
Oh, you want like to go off? When
yeah, I want to be able to set it to go off at 2
so
instead
you don't
of
have
putting
extra
it on for the rest.
All day. Yeah. I mean, the only literature I know is Rav Moshe Feinstein's Isser. He said not to do that.
Well, where do you get that you can do it for the light?
Where do you get? He himself wouldn't even like that, but he says everybody's accepted to do that, but he doesn't believe it's proper for other things. Yeah. So I'm just telling you what he says. I don't know the whole rationale. In his literature, in his tshuva, he does not speak out the rationale. In his language, all he says is something like, yeah, well, he says, although the world has agreed that on lights it's okay, but timers and other things should not be used. And I think that that's the general approach that people have.
A programmed thermostat's a different story.
Programmed thermostat seems to be a different story. Yes, seems to be.
I mean, it's got a line
in its own. Yeah, well, that's really what timer is. But yeah, no, nobody worries about a thermostat. Meaning, you can program the thermostat and let it do what it wants to do. Yeah, good point. Okay, here we are. So today and tonight, it's not Rosh Chodesh anymore. Don't let me fool you. It's now the second of Adar, but this was from today. So, we thought that we would get into I thought, and everybody agreed with me today, that because they had no choice, that we would deal with the issue of hot sink water, not hot water as in cooking with a kettle or an urn, but hot sink water on Shabbos. So I want to introduce, and I figured I'd go wherever the locale, the kitchen, took us, which means that we're going to end up dealing with some issues that have nothing to do with heat per se. By the way, I posthumously entitled this class Warmth of Shabbos. But anyway.
Find another word, not posthumously.
Yeah, right. I'm still alive, but the class is dying. Okay. Thank you very much. What would be the word for the equivalent word? Post-class, I guess. Whatever. There must be a fancy word. Okay. I mean, a Latin word. Okay. So, what's the deal with hot water? Let's try to play halacha detective over here. You have a hot water faucet. Can you use hot water on Shabbos? So I already told you here in the notes that it's almost always a problem. But what are the issues with hot water? What would you say would be the question? Okay, turn on the hot water on Shabbos. What's wrong? Think about it.
Because it heats more water.
Because it heats more water, exactly. So as you drain the hot water boiler, you make room for cold water to come in. The cold water comes in, and when does it get heated? Immediately. No, but not Shabbat. But I mean, with now or later?
Are you talking about the hot?
No. I'm talking about the boiler of the house.
The boiler's not going to kick on the minute you draw it.
Right, but what's in the boiler already? Very hot water.
Very hot water.
So when cool water comes in, it immediately gets heated by the hot water.
That's
see, that's a halachic problem too. So although the heat source of the boiler may not kick in right away because it waits to be ignited or triggered by a drop in temperature, but the water itself is maintained, I'm told, at about 125 to 130 degrees in a typical house boiler, and therefore the water in there is yadzo lettuce bo. So when you introduce cold water to 35 or 40 gallons of yadzo lettuce bo water, you're cooking that water immediately. So therefore, it's not even a question of the gas fire going on or off. It's a question of introducing cold water straight into the thing, which is going to be a problem of bishul. So now, it's an absolutely inevitable consequence of opening the faucet that the water is going to come in, because that's the way it's built. The water, as soon as the pressure allows it to come in, it comes in. As soon as you drain, more water comes in. So therefore, you're opening the tap, it definitely causes cool water to come in, and therefore that cool water will immediately be heated. So there's a very fascinating discussion in the Gemara about a related issue. See, what's happening over here is you're not putting cold water into the boiler. You're allowing cold water to flow naturally into the boiler. You're actually removing a barrier in your faucet to water flowing out of the boiler. And when you do that, the whole water pressure system just takes over, and everything moves down the line, so to speak. So cold water moves into the boiler. So you're releasing pressure, releasing a barrier, and thereby allowing water to go in. Is that the reason I'm going to get into this? You'll see why in a minute. It's actually relevant in terms of certain rulings. Is that a direct act, or is that a secondary act? Is that a cause, as in opening the refrigerator door, allowing cool air to escape, warmer air to go in, which activates the thermostat, which causes the electronic circuit to go on, and so on and so forth, and that's called grumma. That's, nobody says that when you're opening the refrigerator door, you're turning on the motor. You're causing the motor to go on. And then there's a discussion in halacha about how direct a cause it is. Is it an inevitable consequence, or is it a possibly avoidable consequence that won't always happen every time you open? And that's one of the reasons that many people are very lenient with opening the refrigerator at any time, because it's not an inevitable consequence, and even if it is inevitable, it's a grumma. It's not a direct act. It's, I open the door, and that caused something else to happen. Here, when I turn on the faucet or open the hot water faucet and I allow cold water to come in, is that considered to be a direct act, or is it considered to be a grumma? Now, the Gemara discusses murdering somebody by drowning them. How do you drown them? By removing a barrier to water that will naturally flow and kill the person. So you didn't really put the water in their nostrils. You didn't really put the water in the container in which they're lying unconscious. All you did is move a little matchbox, and that allowed the water to come in. So that's there the Gemara has a long discussion about Karach Rishon, Karach Sheni. Is that considered to be your action when the water comes in? Is that considered to be a grumma? So if a person murders somebody, i.e. a grumma, like in some kind of a Rube Goldberg contraption, he's a very bad person, but he cannot be executed by Beis Din because he didn't do it. What he did is he caused something to happen that did it. He put a marble that rolled down a thing that caused the thing to go on, and so on and so forth. So he didn't do it. That's not his own koach, and therefore he wouldn't be subject to execution. Nobody really. It's a chain of events that is triggered. You've seen these in the Harvard, science labs and in the Museum of Technologies. You know, a ball goes down and it activates this and whatever it is, and it causes air pressure and the water pours down and whatever. So it's a cut. Anyway, the Gemara has a major opinion, which is that this is murder, and the person could be executed for such an act. And indeed, the Rambam passes that way. The Rambam in Hilchos Rotzeach rules that such an act is murder, removing a barrier, thereby allowing a person to be flooded, drowned to death. So, because of that psak, most posts can hold that this is the exact same thing. You're opening up the faucet, and therefore it's literally considered like you allowing water into the boiler, and therefore it's a daraisa official. Others would disagree for a variety of reasons, and they hold that this case is not parallel to the case of murder, that this is not, because you're opening the faucet here, it's draining, and that causes room on the other side. It's not exactly the same thing. What's that?
You want the water.
You want the water. So you mean it's worse? If you want the water, you want the hot water.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes a difference.
I'm saying there's another reason.
There's another reason to make it worse.
Right.
Yeah, these Peskim are arguing and saying that this is better, that this is not as bad as the murder case. And anyway, the point is, that will only make a difference regarding somebody who is in a certain level of illness. Because there are certain things that you're allowed to do for a person whose life is at risk. You don't have to do anything for a person whose life is at risk. You don't need any attention at all. You don't have to understand it. You can light a match to save the life of a person whose life is at risk. You can cook anything. You can drive. You can do whatever you want to save somebody's life. But then there's another level of a sick person for whom you're allowed to violate certain Isidro Abundans. So the question is, what level are we talking about here when we're talking about this kind of a thing? So the consensus of almost all the poskim is that we're talking about a doraisa, that it is a serious Torah problem, and therefore you have to treat this as shiloh bishul. Because what's happening is the cold water is getting heated by the hot water that's called toldas ha'or, that's hot water that's heated on top of a fire, that it itself has enough, and that's a bishul problem. Where this becomes really relevant is in the case of multiple dwellings drawing on the same boiler. Why? Because now we're introducing a new element. Because the volume, hear this carefully, I'm going to say it slow, the volume of cold water that is introduced into a boiler does not increase according to the volume of hot water that is taken out of the boiler. Which means that after a certain point, no matter how much hot water you use, there's still going to be the same amount of cold water flowing into the boiler. Why? Because the pipe leading into the boiler has a certain diameter, and the water pressure is a certain amount, and you can't get more than a certain amount of water through the pipe. So therefore, if someone else is already using the hot water, then the water that's coming into the boiler is coming in anyway, and your use of the hot water is not causing it to be cooked, because the water is coming in anyway. Now, obviously, I would say two people using one boiler, the second person is adding more water than would be in theirs. But suppose you have, like, I know one case specifically, in Silver Spring, Maryland, there's a huge half-block long apartment building with around 11 floors, and they have, it seems to me, like, I don't know, 20 or 30 apartments on each floor, and it comes out that they only have two or three boilers for the entire building. They must be, like, you know, room size or something like that. And so at any time of the day or night, even probably 2 or 3 in the morning, it's likely that somebody, more than a couple of people, are using the hot water. And let's go to a hospital. At a hospital...
Does it matter if the people are Jewish or not?
Well, the poskim, all the literature talks about goyim. It seems to me that in terms of this issue, it doesn't matter. If you have lots of Jewish people who don't know or don't care, who are using the water, the fact is you're still... at that time that they're using the water, not in any way adding to the cold water that's being put into the boiler. And therefore, and there's theoretically, in a hospital, there could be a time when there's never any hot water. If everybody in the hospital used the hot water at the same time, the boiler would not be able to keep up, because there'd be only a certain amount of cold water that would be allowed into the boiler, no matter how much water is drained out of it, and they would have to be sitting there waiting till it filled up so that they could use it. It never happens, because it just statistically doesn't work out that that many people use, they have enough boilers in a hospital to supply the typical use. But the point is that there's a point after which, in a large communal setting, where when you're using the water, it's very likely or possible that at that time you're not in any way adding cold water to the boiler because of your use. Now, you don't know that that's true. It's a suffix. So, if the whole concept of adding cold water to a boiler through opening a faucet is a d'oraisa, so then you have a suffix d'oraisa. You have a Torah question, and you never rule leniently, because you might be violating Torah law. But if we're talking about a drabana, we're not sure that it is inevitably going to cause cold water to come into the boiler. Why? Because cold water is anyway coming into the boiler, and you can't make more cold water come in by your act, but we're not sure about that. It could be that people are using the boiler. It could be that they're not using the hot water. So we don't know. So therefore, in a case of great need, there's room for leniency. Because A, the act itself, when you are adding water, may not be considered to be a direct act. It may be different than the case of murder, may be more lenient than the case of murder, and B, it's a suffix if it's happening, and therefore, in case of great need, you can be lenient. There are some rabbanim who will actually tell people who live in such dwellings where there's lots and lots of goyim in the apartment not to worry about using the hot water on Shabbos. Not everybody would say that, but there's definitely room for leniency. The reason I mention this is because you can be sitting around a table and somebody can be saying that it's us or to use hot water. So the Amar Rav said it is allowed. So what's going on here is a question of the level of the Isser in the first place and the setting in terms of the multiple uses of one boiler.
Does that apply to a hotel, I presume, as well?
Yeah, so the thing with hotels is that they have, my understanding is, that they have many more boilers per capita than really necessary, because they want to make sure that none of the patrons ever get in trouble. So the hotels are probably less likely to be a lenient situation, because it's not as common that you'd be drawing on the same boiler as somebody else at the same time.
And I'm sorry to be picky, but it's bothering me. Is there a distinction between the Rube Goldberg contraption and the drowning situation that you told us?
You mean if somebody killed somebody through a Rube Goldberg situation? Yeah, that guy could not be put to death. He'd just be a very bad person.
It is different.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, I'm sorry. I hope I answered the question that I think I answered.
Yes.
If a person kills that way, there is a distinction. Yes. Yes. Okay. Now, the issue of a mixer faucet. I want to point out that the faucets that are one handle that allows cold and hot water to be mixed in through the faucet has another halachic dimension to it, which is that never mind the boiler itself, but as you draw hot water from the boiler and combine it with cold water, you're cooking the cold water very possibly, depending on the exact ratio. So you don't want to be using a mixer faucet, a spigot that combines the two into one faucet, because unless you're very careful to make sure that it's always on the extreme cold side so that it's not allowing any hot water in. I pointed out that in Heritage Hall, in the washing stations, we have these mixer faucets, but don't worry, there's no boiler attached to it, so you can't do the wrong thing.
How about in the restroom?
In the restroom, there is a problem. In the restrooms in the show, there are a problem, and I just went in after my class today to the men's restroom in Heritage Hall, and there is hot water in those, but not in the washing stations. And in the sink near the conference room, there also is hot water with a mixer faucet, which means that you've got to be very careful to keep it on the extreme blue side where it will let only cold water in. Again, there are two problems there. One is that you're inadvertently taking water out of the boiler and therefore introducing cold water into the boiler. And second, you're in the wrong ratio, you would be heating up the cold water that's being mixed with the hot water right here at the tap. Okay. Now, I just want to mention also, just for thoroughness, that there are what I'm calling, I don't know what the industry calls them, what I'm calling bottom entry heaters, water heaters, which means that I believe this is because of energy efficiency. They've come up with a water heater where cold water is introduced into the bottom of the water heater, and the cold water is separated by some kind of a divider. The lower waters are separated from the upper waters. Sounds like a biblical thing, and that way, I think what they want is that the cold water doesn't cool off the hot water, and therefore the boiler is more efficient because the hot water stays hot without being ruined by the cold water. So theoretically, there, when you're using hot water, if you've turned off your boiler before Shabbos so you just have a supply of hot water, or in Israel like to have these dud shemeshes where you can actually turn off the process and it doesn't combine with any cold water, so that should be all right because you're not doing anything by using the hot water. You're allowed to use hot water on Shabbos. It's the question of how it's produced. So if you had a kettle, you're allowed to use hot water under the right conditions if you're not going to be cooking something with it, if it's been in the Kli Rishon, etc. Okay. So the bottom entry heaters may be that if you turn off the whole system, thereby not causing any more cooking to happen on Shabbos, you can use the hot water. Now, what happens if the tap is left on? So what's the problem? Either the tap is left on or was turned on by accident on Shabbos. The hot water tap was turned on by accident. So can you turn it off? So the thing is this, what happens when you turn it off? What happens when you turn off hot water is that you close the system. What you do is that, well, put it this way. Let's just imagine the whole thing. You have a hot water boiler, and it's got a lot of hot water in it, and the flame in the hot water boiler is relaxing because it's done its day's work, and the water is pretty hot, and it went off. It's just the pilot is on. And then somebody goes ahead and takes a nice long hot shower, and they drain the boiler. They take a 35-gallon shower. So now, cold water is in, the temperature is only 80 degrees in the boiler, so the flame gets smart and heats up again and starts cooking. So it starts cooking, and it's got a big job to do because it's got all this cold water in there. So if you want it to get faster, you'll turn off the cold water. You'll turn off the hot water. If you want the boiler to heat up faster, you'll stop using it. Everybody knows that when you have a problem in a house with a bad boiler, you just don't use the hot water for a while until it heats up. So turning off a hot water faucet could be a problem. So it goes like this. If you turned it on and you realize right away, so by turning it off, you're in no way enhancing the boiling process or the cooking process of the boiler. But if it's been a while, it's been running or whatever it is, and it's like I would say 10-15 minutes on a typical house thing could drain the boiler significantly to the point where by turning it off you're actually speeding up the cooking process in the boiler, so then you don't want to turn off the hot water because of that. So it's very rare that you would ever have a case like that, but if you came home on Shabbos and found the hot water running, you do not want to turn it off because you will at that point be speeding up the cooking of the water source, the boiler. Now, the issue of bathing, figured once we're talking about this, we ought to talk about bathing. The issue of bathing on Shabbos in hot water. So the answer is, can't do it. There is no way to bathe on Shabbos unless, God forbid, a person is very sick or postpartum. There's no way to bathe in hot water on Shabbos, the entire body. We're talking, obviously, about water heated before Shabbos, and that's where the sages prohibited it. They had two reasons. The number one is because of what we call in Gemara, balonim, which are the bathhouse operators who, there was a time when there was no hot water typically in a normal home, and you had to go down the street or whatever it is, half a mile away, to a bathhouse to get a warm bath. And there was a lot of pressure on the balonim to have a warm bath. And therefore, the sages were concerned that if you allowed people to bathe in water that was heated before Shabbos, then the balonim, who are not exactly scrupulous and meticulous in halacha, would start secretly heating up the water on Shabbos. These were Jewish operators, and therefore they prohibited it, so therefore there would be no bathing on Shabbos that would lead to heating up water. And also the sages were concerned that people would forget, and also in their earnestness to have hot water to bathe in, they would heat it up on Shabbos without remembering that it's prohibited. So therefore they prohibited any kind of bathing in hot water on Shabbos. However, rechitzas kol gufo, that's bathing the entire body, but aver, limb by limb, one is allowed to wash one's hands, one's allowed to wash one's feet, one is allowed to wash one's face in water heated before Shabbos. Obviously, as I put here in the notes, while you're doing that bathing in water which is heated before Shabbos, and you're only doing part of your body, you can't get involved in other Torah prohibitions, like using a sponge or a washcloth, because that would be a prohibition of schita. Soap is also an issue. Hard soap, for sure, you can't use on Shabbos. Shampoo to lather your hair, you can't do on Shabbos. You can make your hair wet on Shabbos with cold water, by the way. You just can't dry it. You can't squeeze your hair with a towel. You can allow your hair to touch a towel with no pressure, so that the water is kind of picked up by the towel, but you can't apply pressure or even tie a towel tightly around hair that women like to do a lot. Can't do that on Shabbos. So there are a lot of problems that come up with using water on one's body on Shabbos that have nothing to do with heat. But in terms of heated hot water, you can use hot water that's heated before Shabbos, not from the tap because of the problems we talked about before, but water that somehow was stored in a basin or perhaps a tub that was drawn before Shabbos. You can use it for feet or hands or face. Now, you cannot use it for the head per se because the head is considered to be like the whole body, nor can you use it for your torso because that's also considered to be a majority of the body. So you can only use it for parts of the body. So that's how you can use hot water on Shabbos. Babies who have become...
Yes. I know you said shampoo is prohibited, yeah. Does that apply to liquid soap as well?
So liquid soap is a different issue. Liquid soap is a problem that the viscosity of the soap, viscosity being translated as the, actually it's a scientific, it's a thickness, which is the surface tension. It's a whole question of surface tension. They have a way of measuring it. And I actually saw an article by Rav Heinemann, who loves to do this kind of thing, and he figured out exactly what the scientific measure of the viscosity allowable for liquid soap is, meaning that it's strongly recommended by Poskim to dilute liquid soap for use on Shabbos, because the original viscosity produced by most of the soap makers is higher than what halacha would allow in terms of the issue of taking something which is like almost a solid and applying it, and therefore it's best not to. It's best to dilute liquid soap before Shabbos, so you can have it on Shabbos. Babies and bathing. So the bottom line is that if a baby needs a bath, you're allowed to use hot water and lay the whole baby on Shabbos. You don't have to bathe the baby, just the rump or whatever it is. You can put the baby in a warm little tub and just bathe the baby, because a baby is considered like a cholish yeshem basakana. All children, the young children, are considered to be sick in halacha. They should all be healthy, but they're considered to be sick. They're all very vulnerable, and halacha is unbelievably lenient when it comes to children like under six.
How about drying them?
You can, they don't have much hair, and there's nothing wrong with applying a towel with pressure to wet skin. But if you have like those thin baby towels, if they get too wet, you got to be careful that the towel itself doesn't get squeezed, and you want to make sure that the towel doesn't get dipped very often, inadvertently into the basin, and then it's dripping wet, and then you don't want it to make thing, and you come to. You have to be careful about these things. But a baby that needs a bath on Shabbos can be bathed.
And that water has to have been previously.
Previously heated.
If let's say you get stuck, is it out of the realm of possibility to have the child turn
on the hot water? I don't know of such a heder unless the child doesn't know what it's doing. Meaning, if the child is responding to an order, you're not allowed to tell the child to do something for you on Shabbos.
Right, if the child knows that that's what will make the water more comfortable.
You mean to turn it on, to turn on the hot water? I don't think so. You mean what? If a child wants to do it on his own?
Yeah.
You mean you didn't even tell him to do it?
Yeah, most kids know. I mean, they watch you do it every night. So.
I forget what that's like. I didn't know that. I'm like a.
I torture my children. I bathe them all the time. So
really? I don't know. I do not know.
It happened just one time. That's why.
I don't know. Are you obligated to stop a child from turning on hot water?
Right.
It seems to me to be only La Frusha Meisura, that you don't have to do, meaning to not obligated at that age. It's only a chinuch question. The question is, if they know what's if they're old enough to understand the issues, you're not allowed to let them do something because you have to educate them properly. Which means if you're gonna that's another story. You don't want to educate them by making Shabbos so unpalatable that they hate it. Right, so you have to use your judgment, but it's a question. But what I'm saying is that there is an obligation to teach a child the appropriate age what is doable and what's not doable on Shabbos. But you're not obligated to separate a child from doing prohibited things if the child can't absorb it or won't absorb it. You know, so I don't think you have to stop a child, but I think you're never supposed to say let a child develop a habit, of doing that kind of thing. Yes.
Not allowed to ask the child for something which should not be doing on Shabbos.
Right.
That's over the age of
Even as if the child knows what it's doing, even if the child doesn't understand that it's usher, you're not supposed to say to a child, can you take the paper in? Or can you turn on this light?
Can you
hint? No. It's a widely misunderstood halacha. You cannot do that.
You're saying if the child knows what it's doing, meaning let's say you tell the child to turn off the oven, whatever it is, I forgot to turn off the oven, you mean the child knows how to turn off the oven?
No.
The child knows that he's not supposed to turn off the oven.
No, the child doesn't have to know what Shabbos. The child doesn't know what day it is, doesn't know the difference between Shabbos and Sunday. But you're not allowed to say to the child, please turn that switch off, or please turn that way, or that kind of thing. Well, why don't you do that? Now, if a child doesn't know what it's doing, meaning that it's just one of these kids that just always moves, there is nothing wrong with putting a child in close proximity of some switch that it might just end up playing with and turning off. There's nothing wrong. Nothing happened. It's not a chinuch problem, and the child doesn't know what it's doing, and you didn't ask it to do it. But if the child is capable of responding to your directive, you cannot ask the child to do something that's prohibited on Shabbos. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Can I ask you one thing about this hot water thing?
Yes.
So if the water's heated before showers, like say you want to, I don't know, for some reason you want to wash your hands with warm water.
Yes.
But you've got an urn of boiling water. So then you can't mix it with cold water if that's going to cook the cold water, but how bad if it gets just tepid or something?
Exactly. So what you would do, the way to get boiling hot water, which is properly cooked before Shabbos, useful for washing one's hands on Shabbos, would be to take a basin of cold water in appropriate volume, that when you added hot water to it, the cold water would overwhelm the hot water so that it would not become cooked by the hot water, but it would cool down the hot water, but it would still be kishrat. Yeah, right. Right, that's how you do it. This is a Mishnah, actually. It's a Mishnah in Tractate Shabbos, that exact passage. Yes.
If hot water is turned on, it's been in Shabbos, because my kids go to wash first.
Right. You're allowed to turn it off, because it's right like that. You're not doing anything. You're not causing anything.
Even if it's, say, my youngest wash first or whatever in the water, like, they don't turn it off.
Right.
And it's running, and then I get to this, you know.
Yeah, what is it, a minute or two later? That's fine. It's no problem. We're only talking about when you have a serious drainage of the boiler. Yeah.
What's that, how hot it gets, how much it rains?
Right. Right. That's correct.
Uh-huh.
Yes?
Good question. I understand what she said about a baby. Most people fall in that category, but I mean, if you have a baby that actually goes in and turns on the hot water.
Right.
Because it's seen its mother do it oftentimes, you know, mm-hmm. turn this on and makes it nice and warm.
Right.
Okay. 4 years old, whatever.
Right.
You don't scold a child, you know, to do that, but at the same time, when you at least teach them, well, we can't do that because that heats up.
At that age, I wouldn't. It's a judgment call. What you want to do is get into the child's head. You don't want to turn the child into a scholar or a halachic expert. So the point is that what you want to do is get the child used to the idea that on Shabbos we don't do things, certain things. So, for example, you could say, oh, we don't turn on hot water on Shabbos. But it's, at that age, explaining it, that it heats it up, is just absolutely, totally lost. So the thing is, and the child's not even going to remember that you don't turn on hot water on Shabbos. But it's good for an adult to be saying, this is what we do on Shabbos, and Shabbos is different. Because then the idea that Shabbos is different gets into the child, you know. So it's not so much about the hot water, it's more about the Shabbos. I shouldn't say I'll never forget. I recall very, very vividly that when we were being raised in Atlanta, when there were no other Shabbos observant children at all, we had literally never seen another child observe Shabbos until we were about 8 or 9, and then Rabbi Feuerman of Prince William Academy had some daughters who were about 7 or 8. So then we were very excited because we had somebody else who was Shabbos observing in town. But my father allowed us to ride our bicycles even in the street, which is absolutely not allowed. But what are we going to do? We can't play with our kids because they're watching TV. We can't with other kids. We couldn't do reading Playboy magazines, as my best friend used to do all the time. So, you know, that was his. Anyway, so in the bar downstairs with the pool table in his own house. Boy, I don't understand how it came out half normal. Anyway, so the thing is, the point is, so then at one point my father said to us, you know, now you can only drive your bike to the end of the driveway, right, because you're getting older, and soon you won't be able to drive your bikes at all. So the idea was he got us used to it, but he didn't deprive us dramatically, and he had enough sense to know that there were certain things that... So I remember my father allowing us to take books in the woods that he would actually read to us later. I mean, because it was literally survival. You know, what were we going to do all afternoon in July? You know, we hated each other. So what were we going to do? So, you know, by 6 we certainly did. At 5 maybe not, but at 6. Anyway. So he used his brains, you know. Okay, moving on very quickly. Mikvah. So the thing is like this. The halacha brings down, I ran the same problem today. I wanted to go through the whole halacha, but it's not worth it now. It's too late. The bottom line is that women who have to go to mikvah on Friday night are allowed to go into a warm mikvah, because that's not considered bathing. It's a tefillah shel mitzvah. It's a mitzvah immersion. And they're supposed to go in and get out right away. And it is best for the mikvah to be warm, but not as hot as normal on Friday night. For men, it's a major controversy, and this is like, you know, the Hasidim revel in going to the mikvah on Shabbos and sticking their tongues out at the misnagdim who say, the halacha says you can't bathe on Shabbos, and since you're a man, you don't need to go to the mikvah, how could you do it? And the Hasidim say, well, for me, mikvah is so important that it... So there's a whole long thing. But men also, when they go to the mikvah, should not go to a hot mikvah. They should go, and the halacha is clear, they should go in and go out quickly and not do anything other than the job that mikvah is supposed to do and not in any way enjoy it. So, and certainly the issue after immersion having to do with shechita of hair and so on and so forth still applies even in terms of mikvah. Now turning over on the other side, I wanted to talk about the issue of bathing postpartum, which is that there's a halachic differentiation in the period of time postpartum. Till 3 days, a woman is considered to be a chola sheyesh ba sakana, which means she's considered to be literally her life is at risk, and anything she needs for her well-being to avoid discomfort or, you know, stitches or healing or whatever it is, or to avoid infection, she's allowed to do, even for herself, without the help of a guy. If a guy is not easily available, she doesn't have to ask a guy, she can do it herself. So up to 3 days, a woman is allowed to bathe, take a full shower or a full hot bath, and she can actually turn on the bath herself if delaying to find a guy or the guy is not going to be around will cause her discomfort even slightly in the first 3 days.
The hospital is less of a problem, you said,
because
anyway.
You have a nurse. Oh, you mean anyway
because of the boiler.
Interesting, in a hospital, right. Because nowadays 3 days is three times the amount of time you're allowed to stay in a hospital. But anyway. Used to be 3 weeks. It's unbelievable. Anyway.
So that was good. They wouldn't let you out for a week.
Really? Really?
That's so bored by the end.
I know. My mother says she came home from the hospital in an ambulance. Anyway.
That's
crazy. They probably had one of those. They probably had one of those nurses with a Red Cross sign on there, you know. Anyway, and then between 3 days and 30 days is there, you're allowed to do it through a guy, through a non-Jew. You're allowed to have a hot bath for a woman postpartum. Now I wanted to mention the issue, boy, with 5 minutes to go and Diane has to go promptly at 9, and now I'm going to really tease you. So what you're talking about...
Okay, my father will just be awful.
So let's talk first of all about washing dishes before we talk about the issue of preparation, when you're allowed to wash dishes. But when you're allowed to wash dishes, so how do you wash dishes in hot water? So the answer is that you can use hot water, but you cannot use water that's going to be a cooking problem or a melting problem. So you can't pour hot water on hard, dried grease to loosen it, because that's considered to be a problem of NOLA, believe it or not, because you're causing it to melt down into a liquid, this hardened, dried grease. So that doesn't mean you can't clean grease off on Shabbos. You just can't pour hot water on it. So you can immerse the dishes in lukewarm water, or even more than lukewarm water, as long as it's not really a direct pour of hot water onto the grease in order to transform it into a liquid. What else can I tell you about it? The way to wash dishes on Shabbos in warm water is similar to what I described before, which is you take either a basin of water from before Shabbos, and fill it with hot water, and it would be best ideal to be make it a klishlishi, so that you don't have any questions of bishul at all, which means that you have hot water from the faucet. We'll call that iru of kli rishon, meaning the water itself is draining out of the kli rishon, which is the boiler. Then it goes into a second vessel, which is kli sheni, and then that vessel you pour into a basin, and that would be the kli shlishi. And then you can just keep that water. You can even cover it, right? It's not insulation. You can cover it, and then use that water on Friday night to wash your dishes. even though it'll be very hot, but we hope. But it doesn't matter because it's a cliché and it can't cook. And so you can use that. And then you use a proper kind of a brush or a nylon sponge that has very big gaps between the pieces so it doesn't have any absorbency ability. And then you can wash your dishes. You could also probably use a cliché. But it's best to use a cliché. I don't want to say that a cliché is usher, which means that you could just fill it up in the tap before Shabbos, and it would probably take care of most situations. Now, the what washing dishes really gets you into is a question of hachana. When are you allowed to wash dirty dishes on Shabbos? So the problem is this, that the sages prohibited any act on Shabbos, anything at all, which is done in order to save you time or to prepare for something after Shabbos. So if you say, gee whiz, I've got 3 extra hours Shabbos afternoon, I've got nothing to do, I've already finished all my Torah study, and I've got nothing to do, and I've already slept all I can, and I have read all the boring novels I can, and whatever, and I have some time, and I know tonight I'm going to have this big party that I have to go to, and I'm going to now be stuck with these dirty dishes till Sunday morning, so I better wash them now. Can't do that. Even if you enjoy washing dishes, you can't do that because you're not allowed to do anything that prepares for after Shabbos. The sages don't want you using any precious Shabbos time. Plus, they don't want any work done on Shabbos that's not work, meaning physical undertaking, done on Shabbos that is not for the benefit of Shabbos itself. So therefore, you can't do anything, even the slightest thing. I once had a case where I was going to move a piece of paper from here to there. I forgot these situations recently. I was going to move a piece of paper from here to there, and that way it would be easily found when I needed it after Shabbos. That's a prohibited. Not allowed to do that. It doesn't hurt me. It doesn't hurt my arm to move here. It's not work. I don't sweat. And it doesn't take any time. But you can't do that. You can't use Shabbos in any way to prepare for after Shabbos. So washing dishes, the only time you're allowed to wash dishes is if the dirty dishes being there bother you, and you don't have anywhere to put them, so you need to wash them, or if the smell of the dirty dishes is possible because of the temperature and the air conditioner is not working, or whatever it is that you ate could end up causing an aroma in the house, or whatever it is, it'll interfere with the special environment you want to create, the shalosh shudos or something, I don't know. So if there's an aroma or something that's going to be created, and for the benefit of now, it's for Shabbos' benefit, then you're allowed to wash dishes. If you need those dishes for the next day, like Friday night, you need the dishes for the next day, then you're allowed to wash all the dishes as long as you're washing dishes that could be used. Let's say you only have 2 guests. Tonight you have 15 guests. Tomorrow you only have 2. But you don't have any dishes left. So you're going to wash these dishes. Somebody will say, well, you can't wash more than 2 sets of dishes because you only need 2 tomorrow. So Halacha says very clearly that you're allowed to wash all 15 sets because since any one of them could be the ones that you use, it's not considered to be a superfluous act to wash them all because they're now all available for use tomorrow and you don't know which ones you're going to use. But if you have other dishes already clean and you don't need any more, then the Halacha says that it's best, not prohibited, but best, pious is the word, pious, not to wash these dishes if you do have another supply of dishes that's appropriate for the meal tomorrow. You can't argue entirely that it's prohibited because of the halacha that I just told you, that when it's possible that any of them will be used, you can wash them all, as it doesn't appear to be a special preparation act because any of these can now be available for using. So, but still, it's considered to be pious to desist from washing if you have dishes tomorrow. Now, also, I'm told that silver items very often get tarnished if they're left too long with stuff on it. So that's, you're not doing this to prepare for later. This is how you wash such a thing. You wash it right away. So therefore, that's a Shabbos-specific need. It's not that you're doing this to save yourself time or effort later or because you're preparing the dish for later. So therefore, you're allowed to do anything that takes care of your need out. Now, one other thing very quickly about dishes is putting them in the dishwasher. So why would you put them in the dishwasher? Well, one good reason is because they're out of sight. and you want to get them out of sight. So that's fine. So that's so you can put dishes in the dishwasher, but you can't put them in the dishwasher in a way that gets them ready for washing in the dishwasher, which means you cannot specifically say, I'm putting them in the dishwasher, I'll sort them by size, I'll have only the big ones up front, I like this one to be here because it gets closer to the source of water and it washes better. Can't do that. You have to put them in just any way they go. Or, the poskim say that if you're anyway going to clear the table by size, meaning, not if you're anyway, if you clear the table with the small dishes first and then the big dishes afterwards, and you stack them, a pile of small dishes on your counter, a pile of big dishes, there's no reason that you can't take the small dishes which you're putting into the dishwasher and put them in order where small dishes go, because you're not doing anything extra, because that's a pile that you want to put in the thing, and it's okay if when you're doing that action you're putting them in where you like them, because none of your action is just because you're washing them. So if they're sorted by the way that they're removed from the table, you can then continue to put them in the dishwasher, which you're doing only to get them out of sight. You're not allowed to put them in the dishwasher if you're doing it because you want to save yourself time from loading the dishwasher after Shabbos. But if it's a good way of putting them out of sight, you can do that. We put them in the oven because our oven is off.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah.
But how many times have you melted?
We have cooked many dishes.
We have cooked many dishes.
Many plastic
dishes. I've made it melted when I do other things for the end of Shabbos, when I take out the urn, I take outwards in the oven because I also have a pile of melted plastic.
No, Mac. Anyway.
I have one question about that to ask you.
Yes.
If I like to start off, I hate dishwashing.
Yes.
So I try and get everything clean before Shabbos, and I like to put on the last load of dishes before I light the candles, which ought to be an okay thing to do. But somebody told me that you can't do it if it's too close to candle lighting because the noise would bother you. But honestly, the thought of not having a clean dishwasher would really bother me.
Meaning, so you set the whole thing on to before Shabbos?
Before Shabbos.
And then it just goes on later that night?
No.
It's on right then. There's a thing called Ad Shemilsa, which is that the sound is a weekday-ish type thing. It creates a weekday environment.
So happy.
It's the best noise on earth.
I can't tell you.
And it's that quiet hum.
It's just
what about a clothes dryer?
Yeah,
a clothes dryer would be the same thing.
Yeah. I don't know because they're much quieter. They're not, you know what I'm saying? I don't know.
The new dishwashers
are I try and remember to put it on like so that it'll be finished before. But if I've got a full dishwasher and there's soap in there and I haven't lit the candles and it's before Shabbat.
May you turn it on.
I just can't handle the thought that I have to pile up all the dirty dishes on Shabbat.
I really have to check what the husband's saying.
Okay.
I have to check. You need to hear from me. So, let's
check.
Be
sure to write down how strongly I feel about it.
And you would unload it on Shabbos and put your...
No, if I needed stuff, I'd take them out of there because then it's just a storage thing.
Right.
I don't unload it. It's just that after Shabbos, I'm ahead. Or at least I'm not behind.
Right, you're not cleaning up stuff.
I mean, I'm someone Shabbos. Who doesn't like being invited out on Saturday night because I can't handle it. I can't handle facing dishes. My South African heritage.
Yeah, so you won't be invited out because you can't handle facing what dishes?
No, forget about that. The Shabbos thing is the peace on Shabbos is very precious.
Oh, I see.
And the dirty dishes are like
waiting to get me. From cooking on Friday.
Right, from cooking on Friday.
Oh, okay.
But I work and I come home and I try and have everything done ahead of time. But there's always a dishwasher full of stuff anywhere. And I hate them with a major passion.
I hear you. I want to check.
And it was fine until they told me. And now I still do it, but I feel guilty.
They ruined it.
You're a pious woman.
Let me see.
I feel guilty. You're already ahead of
the game.
Any other questions before we close? Yeah.
Can I just confirm, so if you prefer, I haven't used the toll there, the cloud pot, but when people don't and put water into the cloud pot after they emptied it out from toll, you can't do that from the
That's really a chana. I don't see any heter for that at all. Yeah, that's a real problem. Or
if you pass that, if
the smell.
Pass the champ out of 30, yes,
that'll
calories.
Help with the smell?
A lot of people,
put soapy water.
It will smell. I mean,
like my chicken soup pot on Friday night, really if you don't put soapy water in a chicken pot that had chicken soup in it, it's...
Okay, if you're really doing it to avoid the smell, then 100% enjoy it. Hannah, if you're really doing it to avoid the smell, then enjoy it. Then do it. If you're doing it to stop it from smelling, then it's okay to do. But if you're doing it because you want it to loosen up enough to... I think I have to take it. Let me just... Hello? Yeah, I'm sitting in front of a class, so I can't talk right now because the poll is unidentified. I was very nervous. Okay, let's be over. This guy's an expert mimic. Okay, out of town. You don't know him, you never will. Okay. Anyway.
For the summit,
yeah.
Heating up a baby's bottle.
Yeah.
If let's say your kids, like my kids, are used to the taste of watered down milk, so we train them. So can you take water from a cliche, hot water in a cliche, and pour it into cold milk?
I think so. Yeah.
It's fine. Right?
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. Yeah.
I mean, it tastes gross, but
they
don't seem to notice.
Yeah. You're saving money? Is that what it is?
No, it's easier.
Uh-huh.
Because to heat up a bottle
in
hot water takes a lot longer.
Yeah. There's every reason to do that. Yeah, okay. That's fine. Yeah. Yes?
You were talking about not using warm water on the head. The torso?
Yes.
So does that mean the face is not using
No, the face is fine. Okay. The face is fine.
What about you talking about the hot water before? What about putting ice cubes in hot soup on a Friday night?
Ice cubes in a hot soup
in a bowl of hot
is
soup.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
You're talking about a newspaper.
Hot soup in a bowl of soup on the table. Bowl of soup on the table, yeah.
The newspaper, even within an error, is what it's very
A newspaper is, I don't want to say this because, like, you know, it's considered to be, like, you know,
a
right of American Judaism. I do not see any basis at all with leniencies and everything. A newspaper that's printed on Shabbos is mukzah. And almost all newspapers that you get on Saturday morning were printed a Friday night after Shabbos began. I just don't get it. And besides the fact that there's a big question of how it gets to your door, because you're not allowed to have a guy deliver you a newspaper. So the halacha does require you, well, the halacha requires you to tell the guy not to deliver it. If he ends up delivering it anyway, fine. But then he can't deal with it until after Shabbos. And also it came from Chutzot Chum. My New York Times comes from way outside of Atlanta. So that's another reason that it's mukzah.
Why should you tell the delivery boy not to deliver it on Saturday?
You tell him, as far as you're concerned, you don't care if he delivers it or not. You don't have to tell him not to deliver it. You tell him, I do not care. You are not obligated to bring it to me.
Well, I don't even know how to get in contact with him. I will call up the newspaper.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know how to do that. Yeah, because the guy comes so early. Like, I see. Okay, certainly. Yes.
Can't you just leave it on the ground? Right?
Yeah. What's that?
Can't you just leave it there?
For sure you can leave it. Oh, no, that deals with the mukzah problem. But the problem is that you're not allowed to have a guy do something for you on Shabbos. So so the fact that you're paying for the thing to be delivered, halacha says is a problem. You're supposed to tell them. Maybe it could be that if you tell the people you order it from, the guy at the 800 number in New York.
Yeah, I would have
read.
I mean, I could call him up here.
I got a real Lulu here, but
800 number in New York, people don't understand.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, mail's different. That's a diet to the nashe. That's a whole different story over there. The mailman's doing. The post office requires him to do it. And you don't pay him to do it. It's a whole different story.
So is that newspaper? Are you allowed to?
No, I will pay you.
Yeah, but so Shabbos, you're allowed to.
I'm paying him for the newspaper. Can I ask you about the issue?
What's that?
I thought you couldn't get benefits of something that was done on Shabbos.
Yeah, so I think that Bechdei Shiyaz, it was just a very short time after Shabbos, so practically irrelevant. Practically irrelevant. Yeah.
So you're recommending, like, I get the AJC.
Yeah.
So I should call them up and
say,
and rather didn't come up Saturday.
I don't know who to call. That's the problem.
I mean, there is a circulation department.
Yeah.
You're blowing minds.
Yeah, I know. They don't know what they're talking about. The mileage will not know what you're talking about.
The delivery man is delivering a little
all
night. You know what
day it is. 4 o'clock in the morning. How do you deal exactly with these things? I don't know. I actually used to know my delivery guy. I used to know him. in yeshiva, I used to get a newspaper, I used to know the guy. How do you do that? I don't know what to do. I don't think telling them at the circulation department helps. Because it's like, why don't you just call up your gardener and tell them you don't want the newspaper? It doesn't matter. It doesn't make a difference. The problem is...
But you don't pay his salary, you know, and he's required to do that.
Right, it could very well be, because you're just paying for a subscription and the newspaper is delivering it to you. I don't know, the poskim seem to say that. I'm just repeating what I see. If I was making up halacha, I'd say something different. Let's see. No, I'm serious. You have to follow poskim. It's unbelievable. I want to tell you, a posek has judgment, and the judgment is a result of two things, two separate things. One is a tremendous amount of experience and weighing of different halacha, which is an art in and of itself. So it's not just, well, I know all the issues, now I can make a decision over here. A person has to know how to balance one thing against another. And secondly, a posek is absorbed of the entirety of Torah, and therefore they just have a totally different thing. My judgment is literally not worthy of being trusted. It literally, my instincts are to say, you would never fly a plane with me, even if I told you I read the book, back cover to cover. You know that I just need, and that's the way it is. You have to run a real posek, and a posek is not somebody who's smart, who read a lot of books. A posek is somebody who is an expert, who is a recognized leader, who got a tremendous amount of experience, and who deals with all kinds of halacha. You can't even be an expert in one area of halacha. You can't. A posek is either a posek or in everything, or he's a posek in nothing. I mean, people will say, talk to him. He's better for Ebenezer or something like that. But it's important to know. So therefore, we can always disagree, and a lot of things don't make sense. Rav Moshe, I said this morning, Rav Moshe holds that there's an allowable way to brush your teeth on Shabbos. We all know this, which is you can't brush your teeth by putting toothpaste on the toothbrush. But if you have a dry toothbrush and you apply mouthwash or liquid toothpaste to your mouth, you can brush it with a dry toothbrush. Fine. Because the problem with the toothbrush is schita. You're squeezing that which is on the toothbrush out of the toothbrush as you brush. But if it's dry and you're simply brushing the wet teeth with the substance, that's fine. So Moshe says, that's great, but you cannot wash the toothbrush afterwards. Because he holds that's hachana. That's preparation for afterwards. Now, in my humble opinion, that's not hachana. Because that's equivalent to putting my talis back after Musaf in the right place. Why am I putting it back? For after Shabbos? No, I'm putting it back because that's where it belongs. So nobody, in my humble opinion, when you're washing a toothbrush, nobody puts a toothbrush back without washing it, right? But Rav Moshe holds that is preparing for afterwards. I'm not going to argue with Rav Moshe. So I think it doesn't make any sense to me.
You brush your teeth after lunch, too?
Yeah.
That's not putting it away.
If you're planning, that's a good point. But when you brush it after lunch, it better be dry. Because if it has water in it from the rinsing, you have a problem of schita. But that's a good point. If you're going to brush it later and the toothbrush will be dry, then you can rinse it in the morning. No question about it. But my point, though, is not the toothbrush. My point is that Moshe Feinstein says this. I know that my brain is out of touch with reality if I don't understand it. That's all.
What about those little brush up things you slip on your finger?
Those melty things?
They're little, like, fleas.
They don't melt.
Oh.
They don't melt.
I have to see them before I answer. I have no idea. They're not moist?
Well,
they have some moisture
in
them.
They're not like a baby wipe. They're not like that.
They're not like, really?
It's dry.
No, you just rub them over your teeth.
Cool. I don't know, how do they work? What, the liquid, the humidity in your mouth takes out the stuff?
Yeah.
Where do you get that?
Walmart. They're new. Oral B just brought them out about 4 months ago.
Wow.
They need to ask you if they're still okay to use.
Bill, I know I can kiss you on Shabbos. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Thank you.